Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
This is part 81. No, this is part 80, excuse me, of the new improved liberalism, the new improved broad road to destruction. You know, I just finished a two-part series for my Sunday school class, and I wanted to actually share that on the podcast. So it will probably turn out to be about a four-part mini-series, which is still under this general topic of liberalism. And the title for this little mini-series is Powerful Voices from the Past, Warning of the Imminent Future. And I have referred to these some of these authors and books from the past, in past podcasts, and I want to refer back to them again because of the wealth of information that can be found in the pages of these books. The first and the oldest of these powerful voices from the past is Samuel Andrews. He wrote the book in 1898. Entitled Christianity and Anti-Christianity in Their Final Conflict. Now the next, I already mentioned 1898. The next book, chronologically, the next newest book in the list, Renald Showers wrote What on Earth is God Doing? And that, of course, is in a further edition now, a newer edition. So that's available. That came out around 1973. And then, of course, Dave Hunt wrote The Seduction of Christianity in 1985 and its sequel, Beyond Seduction, A Return to Biblical Christianity, in 1987. So I will be referring more to those books in the next few podcasts, but I will, of course, talk a little bit about Dave Hunt in this podcast. Now, there's so much in the news recently that I want to look at, you know, the things that are reflecting the apostasy in our time and in the time to come, which is, you know, a regular topic, actually, if you listen to my program. But I think it's very timely and important. I found an older book recently, which was in 1998, so not really old like 1898, but a little bit older book, about 20 years old now almost. And I'd like to integrate some of the insights and quotes from the prophecy experts in this book, particularly from chapter 17. And this book, entitled Revelation, of course, goes chapter by chapter, correlating its chapters with the chapters of the book of Revelation. And the author's name is Damon Duck. And of course, you know, I give this disclaimer that I don't necessarily agree with everything that these prophecy experts believe. I have chosen those themes that relate to the present apostasy and the coming together of the harlot church. This is not a rapid replay, but I have shared some of the current event stories in recent podcasts that I will be resharing as I integrate them with these topics from this book, which I found to be a refreshing, older book, but for the most part, pretty much what I believe about future things that are coming, eschatology and prophetic themes. Of course, we're centering on the apostasy and the harlot church, Mystery Babylon, the Great Harlot of chapter 17. To start, here's one powerful voice from the past, and I mentioned I would be speaking a little bit about Dave Hunt, one of my heroes. And in the newsletter, the Berean Call newsletter of July 2017, Dave wrote an article called Christ and Antichrist. It was first published in July of 1990, which was actually about 5 years after he wrote Seduction of Christianity. Now, this article, I have a couple of points, a couple of paragraphs I want to read. He says, a false Christianity must become the world religion, a Christianity that all religions can accept and that embraces all religions into one faith. Hence the necessity for today's growing apostasy. to create an apostate church, to be the Antichrist's earthly bride, just as the true church is Christ's heavenly bride. Then further he notes, an ecumenized Christianity in partnership with all religions will carry on and prosper even more after the rapture than before. The unifying factor will be concern for Mother Earth. You know, think about climate change and such things. Working for peace and ecological wholeness will have replaced truth as the basis of Christianity, as the World Council of Churches has already decreed. And of course, you know, the World Council of Churches is an extremely liberal organization, a fake Christianity. It's been around, you know, been with us for some time. Now, from page 246 of the book on Revelation, Revelation 17:1 is quoted. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, "Come, I will show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters." And a side note here, again, mentions ecumenism, the effort to merge all the world's religions into one giant religion. Often the term ecumenism, I often use it as a term that regards churches coming together to try to become all part of, you know, the supposedly the Church of Christ. But it's also a term that is used by many concerning merging the world's religions as well, not just denominations of professing Christians. A related term, of course, which you'll hear me use often, is interfaith. And moving on to page 247, I have a couple of quotes here. Let's see if I can, I don't know if this is the proper pronunciation of his name, Arno Frosch. He says, "The political roots of ecumenism, the United World Church, are in Rome. The spiritual roots go back to Babylon." And then Ed Heinzen, who's been around forever, teaching Bible prophecy, just a little bit of exaggeration there, says, "This will be the final phase of the New World Order. The idea of a new world religion of peace and cooperation is already being proposed. Religious unity has been endorsed by Pope John Paul II, the Dalai Lama, and leaders of the World Council of Churches." Now, I have quoted from this article before, but this is an article I picked up when I first moved to Los Angeles in 1986, and this is the headlines of the LA Times, Tuesday, October 28, 1986. 60 religious leaders join the pontiff. The streets of Assisi ring with prayers for peace. Carrying olive branches and offering prayers, Pope John Paul II and the representatives of the world's religions, including a Crow Indian medicine man from Montana and an African animist witch doctor, pledged Monday to work for peace. Well, of course, an animist is somebody who's a spiritist, contacts spirits. A witch doctor pretty well says it all, I guess. The Pope urged the interdenominational conclave to meet the dramatic challenge of our age, true peace or catastrophic war. The Dalai Lama, the exiled Buddhist God King of Tibet, said the historic gathering of religious figures offered proof of the indispensable spiritual dimension in efforts to end war. And then, much closer, you know, to our time, actually within the last few weeks or so, there was a article that I noted, commented on, I believe, before. The title of that article is "World's Top Religious Leaders Issue Rare Joint Appeal," and this was actually June, so it's been a couple of months. June 15th, 2017, and from the there also was a video that came with it. And the comment is, "The world's most prominent religious leaders call on everyone to make friends across religions." So, you know, pray for peace, come together, can't we all just be one? You know, you get the idea, ecumenical, interfaith all the way. But I want to read a little bit from this article. "Religion is often viewed as a force that sows divisions between people, but the world's most prominent religious leaders have come together to present a different vision of how faith can work in the world. In a rare move, major religious leaders, from Pope Francis to the Dalai Lama, issued a joint appeal Wednesday, asking people to follow a simple bit of advice: make friends with people of other faiths. personal contact, personal friendship, then we can exchange a deeper level of experience, the Dalai Lama said. Well, the Dalai Lama and Thomas Merton, who of course was one of the influential people, you know, who were really behind the modern popularity of the contemplative prayer movement or the contemplative spirituality movement. He and the Dalai Lama, Thomas Merton, found that mystical experience was really sort of a tie that bound them together, even though Merton was a Catholic, he was a Catholic monk, and Dalai Lama was a Tibetan Buddhist, the Dalai Lama believing he was reincarnated. So, you know, and you have that mysticism is often believed by many to be the tie that's going to bind many different various religions, I would say false religions, together. One of the wonderful things, this article says, about spending time with people completely unlike you is to discover how much you have in common. Now, of course, what I would say is, yes, but what about that one major difference between biblical Christianity and all of these false religions? And of course, once again, I always seem to get this verse in, don't I? John 14:6, no one comes to the Father but by me. Jesus Christ is the only way. And Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 through 10, tell us that we're saved by faith, not of works, lest any man should boast. By grace, of course, grace, faith, not of works, lest any man should boast, but that God has foreordained us who are part of that body to good works that we should walk therein. So the works do not precede our relationship because God has this all planned out for us. Works have no part in our salvation, and I guess would be the main emphasis that I'd like to make. All right, now another quote, and this is Hal Lindsey made a quote. I expect to see more and more mergers between Christian denominations and more emphasis on ecumenism. Remember, this book is about 20 years old. And again, I have shared some of these things before, but I will do so again. From the Living Lutheran magazine, which is the magazine of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, which is one of the two liberal branches of the Lutheran Church. And the front cover, somebody pointed out to me something I hadn't noticed before, because I was just going after the article. Well, for one thing, on the cover, of course, of the magazine, it says, one of the articles called Out of Many, One God. And there's a mural and behind a lady who's standing with a T-shirt, which is the same as the mural. And it's like those coexist bumper stickers you see where all the different religions are all joined together. And, you know, again, that interfaith ecumenical idea. Can't we all just get along? Let's be one. You know, let's look at all of our many similarities rather than the big difference. And out of that magazine, and I've read this in earlier podcasts, there's an article also called Unity in Diversity. And again, relating back to what Hal Lindsey said about what he thought he would see, and this is exactly what you're seeing, although in this particular article it's describing liberals as opposed to, you know, who are much more prone, of course, to want this type of interfaith or ecumenical thing. But other churches are getting on that bandwagon as well. But anyway, Let Us Break Bread Together was the anthem that resounded loudly and clearly on March 26 as four Christian denominations worshipped and shared the Eucharist at the United Church of Christ, liberal. The churches had gathered to celebrate the 20th anniversary of signing the Formula of Agreement, which declares full communion exists between the ELCA, which is the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, and three Reformed bodies, the Presbyterian Church USA, liberal, and the Reformed Church in America, of course, and of course I already mentioned the UCC, the United Church of Christ. The ELCA currently has three other full communion agreements with the Episcopal Church, liberal, the Moravian Church in America, and the United Methodist Church, liberal. So we see the harlot coming together. What is full communion? A full communion agreement is a way for denominations to affirm each other as members of the same baptized body of Christ. It allows churches to recognize each other's sacraments and affirm their various ministries. It also allows for recognizing the ordination of ministers, which has led to the sharing of clergy between denominations. All right, now here's another article pertaining to this ecumenism entitled Reformed Church Body Signs Declaration on Justification to overcome divisions with the Catholic Church. And of course, this article originally came from Roger Oakland, Michael Grybowski from the Christian Post added to this article apparently. But anyway, and the comments are from Roger Oakland. The move towards an ecumenical unity with Rome by denominations that were once part of the Reformation is now almost accomplished. For a Protestant leader to say that there is no difference between what the Roman Catholic Church teaches about salvation and what the Bible teaches is totally absurd. Certainly, this is a clear sign of the great falling away that the Bible warns about, or the apostasy, of course. And there again, from the Christian Post, a worldwide coalition of Reformed churches representing approximately 80 million Christians has signed on to an ecumenical statement with the Roman Catholic Church to overcome divisions from the time of the Protestant Reformation. The World Communion of Reformed Churches signed a joint declaration on the doctrine of justification with Catholic, Lutheran, and Methodist leaders last week at a church in Wittenberg, Germany. According to a WCRC press release, the declaration stated that mutual condemnations pronounced by the two sides during the Reformation do not apply to their current teaching on justification. And this article was from July 25th, again, not too long ago. And then we have this. This is from Proclamation Magazine, the editor, Colleen Tinker, who is a former Seventh-day Adventist. Her and her family, they got out of this cult. And she's the editor of Proclamation Magazine, which is a magazine basically for ex-Seventh-day Adventists and other Sabbatarians and others who are interested in finding out more about the deceptions of Seventh-day Adventists. Well, anyway, the title of the article is Mormons, Catholics, and Adventists Collaborate. And it says that Mormons, Catholics, and Seventh-day Adventists collaborated on Thursday, July 20th, and this, of course, was in 2017, unloading beds and mattresses into the rooms of the new Pope Francis Haven House. Catholic Charities was getting it ready for occupancy. The Mormons became involved early in June. On the surface, this story is a heartwarming account of religious people inspired by the example of Jesus joining forces to help the needy. Under the surface, however, there are dynamics that reveal the similarities of these three organizations. While Adventists and Catholics have made several business decisions to meld their hospitals under the same banner, the union between the two remains ironic. Ellen White wrote in no uncertain terms that Rome was the spiritual enemy of Adventists and Bible truth. The Roman Catholic Church, in fact, will be responsible for trampling the consciences of true believers, according to Ellen G. White. Now, sharing humanitarian work, they both hide behind a social service facade and ignore the propaganda dividing them. There's a good reason that Christians have historically refused to partner with Mormons and other heretical groups. It confuses the gospel for Bible-believing, born-again sons of God to appear to share the same goals as people who teach a different gospel and do not regard the Bible as God's inerrant word to us. Now, we see Adventists partnering not only with Catholics, but also with Mormons, whose core beliefs differ from each other. Ironically, however, Mormonism's mission to follow the example of our Savior Jesus Christ is quite similar to Adventist healthcare's goal, expressed clearly by Loma Linda University Medical Center's mission statement, to continue the teaching and healing ministry of Jesus. The uncomfortable truth that emerges from examining this and other similar partnerships between Adventism and Mormonism and or Catholicism is that at the core they are not wildly different from each other. None teaches a completed atonement accomplished on the cross. None teaches that we must repent of our sin and be born again of the Holy Spirit. Adventism poses as a Christian humanitarian force in the world, but in reality, it has far more in common with its nemesis, the Roman Catholic Church, and with an admitted cult that has, by Adventists' own testimony, a false prophet. Adventism is a chameleon that is willing to adopt whatever color is next to it in order to avoid detection and in order to protect itself. While God does bless the world, even through the humanitarian work of false religions, this fact does not validate these organizations' evangelism. as Christians, we must be firmly rooted in the Bible and the gospel. So, there's some more incidents of ecumenism in our day. Now, on page 247 of this book of Revelation, we have a current events, a section that I want to read from. It says here that the declaration, or the Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions, Declaration on a Global Ethic, states, "We affirm that there is an irrevocable, unconditional norm for all areas of life, for families and communities, for races, nations, and religions. There already exists ancient guidelines for human behavior which are found in the teachings of the religions of the world," you know, all of them, in other words, "and which are the conditions for a sustainable world order. Pope John Paul II has prophesied that there will be unity of faith and all religions will be worshiping together by the year 2000 AD. Now, of course, I'd say that's obviously a false prophecy, but maybe in his mind before he passed on, he would have said yes. You know, in other words, my statement is yes and no. Not all peoples of all religions, just apostates and pagans. So, no, it's not really. It is happening, but all religions are not worshiping together. I'm not worshiping with all other false religions, or with all false religions. I can assure you of that. Now, the next. Oh, to finish. You know what? Let me finish out the comment from this current events. I didn't finish. There is an unspoken alliance today between powers inside the Vatican and leaders of major international humanist organizations who would change the Roman Catholic Church from a sacred institution to one whose primary function is to act as a stabilizing social force in the world. They see the Church as the only global structure able to do this. The one obstacle is John Paul II. He is seen as a defender of medieval traditions. They want a pope who shares their more liberal globalist view." Well, that's interesting. Of course, Pope John II was very much interested in a world religion, but he was more conservative, of course, than the present Pope Francis. And that leads me to an interesting article called "Vatican Drama: Former Pope Slams Current Pope." The emeritus Pope Benedict just slammed the current pope by saying the Catholic Church is about to capsize. And this article is from July 20th, 2017 on Truth Feed. It says the current pope, Francis, recently slammed Trump supporters and is an open borders socialist who pushes forced Islamic migration, all while hiding safely behind his walls with his private army. "The Catholic Church is a boat on the verge of capsizing," said Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, in a personal message for the funeral mass of his close friend Cardinal Joachim Meissner on Saturday. So, very interesting current events in our time. I was reading in that book of Revelation there of current events that were taking place at that time, but you see all this stuff coming together. Now, Grant Jeffrey, on page 249 of this book in Revelation, he says, "Pope Paul John II is constantly calling for the nations to abandon their opposition to world government." And that, of course, leads us to another article that I've read in the past. Pope Francis says U.S. needs to be ruled by world government for their own good. And this is by Jerry Ungurian. she puts it this way: "Pope Francis, a very different kind of pope. From the time that Pope Benedict XVI stepped down and the new pope was chosen, most people knew that we were witnessing something very unique. No pope had resigned in 500, and I think it's more accurate to say it was 600 years, I think. And Pope Francis was the first Jesuit pope ever." And then the article goes on: "Pope Francis, world government must rule U.S. for their own good. Pope Francis told the Italian newspaper La Repubblica that the United States of America has a distorted vision of the world, and Americans must be ruled by a world government as soon as possible for their own good." That's kind of wild, to say the least. But anyway, moving on to back to the book that I were studying here by Damon Duck, page 249. We have a quote from Ed Heinsohn, and it says, "A false prophet of international fame And let me make sure I have the right quote. Hold on just a second. Yes. Here we go. False prophet of international fame will suddenly emerge to gain control of the world religious system and use it to reinforce the worship of Antichrist. Pope John Paul II is in favor of a one-world religion, but he wants to come it to come about under his terms. He wants to be the one who decides what this one-world religion will stand for and what it will reject. For example, he does not want Catholics to become Protestants. He wants Protestants to become Catholics. He is for unity, but under his leadership and his terms. He believes whoever replaces him as the next pope will not be as committed as he is. That's interesting, or at least with the one that came after Benedict, Francis. He believes he will be replaced by someone who will relinquish church beliefs for a secular worldview, and that's Pope Francis, of course. And he believes he will be the last faithful pope. The next pope could be the false prophet. And then, of course, I noted, of course, Benedict has come and gone, but how about Francis, the first Jesuit pope? Okay, you know, the Jesuits were the ones involved in persecuting believers in the Counter-Reformation, during the Counter-Reformation. Now, there's another article that's pertinent here, and this is one entitled, Pope Francis, Antichrist, Pope Francis tells Catholics in Rome that a personal relationship with Jesus is dangerous and harmful, and that's from Now the End Begins website. Last week, Pope, and this is from July 22nd of this year, Pope Francis told the Italian Republic, newspaper La Repubblica, I just quoted that, the United States of America has a distorted vision of the world, and Americans must be ruled by a world government as soon as possible for their own good. The week before, he also called for a one-world government and political authority, arguing that the creation of the one-world government is needed to combat major issues such as climate change. And then some more comments. Dropping all pretense of being the vicar of Christ, Pope Francis told a fawning crowd of 33,000 Catholics in Rome that a personal, direct, immediate relationship with Jesus Christ must be avoided at all costs. He stated repeatedly that the only relationship you can have with Jesus must be from within the confines of the Roman Catholic Vatican system. These are the words of Antichrist, is what this author says. We'll strike that last comment. We don't know for sure. There are those of you who believe, he said, the Pope, that you can have a personal, direct, and intimate relationship with Jesus Christ outside of the communion and mediation of the Catholic Church. These temptations are dangerous and harmful. You can see this for yourself if you go to the Now the End Begins website and watch the video. Now, finally, the article, Catholic churches in Jerusalem blame Israel for Muslim violence, deny biblical roots of the Temple Mount. Amid the intensifying battles surrounding the Temple Mount, the Catholic Church expressed its concerns in terms that place the blame entirely on Israel while referring to the site exclusively by its Muslim name. Talks about a couple of Druze Israeli policemen who were murdered by terrorists. And, of course, the heads of the churches in Jerusalem expressed concern regarding recent escalation. They said the violence was due solely to a change in the status quo, placing metal detectors. And then Bishop Muneb Yonan, head of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Jordan, no doubt related to the Evangelical Church, Lutheran Church USA, I would think, said on Vatican Radio that the metal detectors are a form of collective punishment, which should not be permitted because of an attack by two persons. I've got to go. I'm out of time. We'll continue next week. God bless you all.